This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Hello, this is Jeremy Roberts on Radio Hawke's Bay for Hawke's Bay Poetry Live, a program broadcast on Wednesday afternoons at 3 p.m. You can go to the website and listen as a podcast as well. If you're quick enough, you might even get an MP3. I'm very excited today. I've got a very special guest, Hiram LaRue from Maryland, USA. Let me talk about him first. He's a very experienced poet. During his career, LaRue guided U.S. government food security programs. He's had a seventh collection of poems called This Much Very, love the title, published in 2025. He's had poems appearing in issues of Poetry South, the Iowa Review, Poetry Scotland, and Contemporary American Voices. And he's been nominated for 4 National Pushcart Awards. He's received support from art councils and food banks, as well as the United Nations and Feed the Children, for his poetry, Times Hunger. And we'll talk about this a little later. It's an initiative that is bringing the world of poets to the anti-hunger cause. And he founded the Voices of Woodlawn, a powerful program of poetry, music, and art that explores America's tragic history and legacy of slavery. LaRue is a courtesy faculty at 5 U.S. universities, is a former member of the Folger Shakespeare Library's Poetry Board, and serves as the poetry consultant to WBJCFM Classical Radio in Baltimore, Maryland. And he lives in Maryland. So listeners, if you weren't quite sure, Maryland is a state south of Pennsylvania, north of Virginia, on the east coast of the USA. Welcome to the show, Hiram.
My goodness, Jeremy, thank you so much. Yes, I am from Maryland, USA. I'm just outside of Washington, D.C., if that gives folks a bearing. But I must say, this is my first quote-unquote trip to New Zealand. Isn't Zoom or these technologies that we use, aren't they wonderful? Without a passport, we can visit like this and get to know one another. And I am very, very grateful for the technology that enables this kind of opportunity. And I'm grateful to you for the invitation to visit with you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I leapt at the chance, and looking forward to finding out so much more about you and hearing your poems. Look, I always open with this question. Who or what turned you on to poetry in the first place, Hiram?
Yeah. When I was a knee-high kid, I think I was fairly shy, and poetry was one way that I had, I realized I might use to kind of express some things that I just was shy about expressing otherwise. I also had a paternal grandmother who enjoyed writing poetry and enjoyed reading poetry, and she shared some of that love of poetry with me. And then when I was just a little bit older in high school, what we call high school here in the U.S., I discovered E.E. Cummings. I discovered a lot of other poets, but E.E. Cummings made me sit down as I was reading his poems, and I never will forget thinking, you mean you can do that sort of thing in poetry with poetry? So he enabled me to begin and be brave enough to start. So Had interesting starts that way.
Oh, it's lovely to identify a clear moment like that. I imagine there were other poets. So there's a family connection there for you. Teachers at school, any particular people? What or was it? Was poetry a solid part of the curriculum in the English studies or?
That's a good question. We certainly read poetry in the classes that I was taking at the time. I don't know if that's still the case or not. And of course, at that time, all the poems were in textbooks, hard copy textbooks, that we would not on handheld or anything like that. But no, the teachers, we read a lot of short stories. We also read some, novels. But they also included, the teachers also included some poems. And for some reason, the poems just spoke to me. I think they're the concise nature of the language, the conveyance of pretty powerful emotions in many poems were what attracted me.
Did you like the way they looked on the page? Does that sound like a funny question?
No, it's not funny at all. In fact, it's very timely in that I've been experimenting a little bit with just how the poem can be laid out on the page to reinforce the rhythm and cadence of the poem. Certainly the early poems I encountered, the way they were laid out was impressive to me. Some were just pretty much all left justified, but many of the newer poems from contemporary poets writing in the then 60s, 70s, 80s, jumped all over the page. And so that was very notable, and I tuned into that too.
Liberating.
Yes.
Did you hear any recordings of poets reading it when you were young?
I did. On records, on television, I remember there was, I think you're a fan of Lawrence Ferrell and Getty. There was a television program of one of his longer poems in black and white, set in San Francisco. But the poets presenting his work, actually performing his work, read it aloud. And I know I was mesmerized by that program. Coney Island of the Mind is the one that the poem that was performed. It was just remarkable.
Lawrence. Well, look, how about diving straight in and sharing a poem, Iram?
Sure. So here's a poem that appears in my most recent collection. The collection was published by Alien Buddha Press this year, earlier this year. And this poem is all about gratitude, or actually about not being grateful enough. And I read it now because it kind of introduces the listeners perhaps to me a bit more. It first appeared in a journal called Poetry Bus, and then, as I said, appeared in my most recent collection. It's titled Wilt or Stray. I am incredibly lucky. Even this haze knows it. Even my useless gaze says so in every way. To be where I am now, living like this, is like cherries on a branch. In fact, I'm not nearly grateful enough for this mud and for its reasons. Not thankful enough for fences blown down or kinked hoses. No, I don't deserve fortunes. In fact, I need to tip my hat in love and honor to every buzzing swarm that's coming at me, or to any wilt or stray. And I should surely thank my lucky stars, my blessings. For what last night had its way with the row of beans out back in the garden. So that poem is titled Wilt or Strayed.
Yeah, no, that's a lovely opening. Thank you, Hiram. Would
Sure.
you say that's a poem that a mature, only a mature person could really write?
Well, that's an excellent question. Could I've written, well, could anyone, but I have to personalize and say, could I have written that when I was in my teens or 20s? Probably not, because I think the poem kind of reflects back to all the privileges, all the gifts that the poet has been given, and recognizes that those truly are gifts that should never be assumed, and that also mistakes and unpleasant surprises, like kink hoses, can sometimes be the source of a lot of gratitude as well.
Well, a row of beans, yeah, it's more, that's more important than a Porsche. I like that.
Right.
And of course that links to a subject very dear to your heart that we'll get to. When did you start going to public events and sharing your work? Like, were you writing for just quietly writing away, or did you quickly go to live readings? How did that all unfold for you?
Sure. I often say, and it's not too far from the mark, that poets are like bats. They come out at night. So when I was working, I'm retired now, but when I was working, I would work during the day and then I'd head to readings or poetry gatherings or workshops at night. And that was happening, when I started working. So out of college, I didn't participate too much in poetry things in college. I had a few things published, but I didn't go to groups that much. But when I started working, particularly in the Washington, D.C. area, where there is a was and still is a very, very active writing community, I started to plug in. And I was thinking, Jeremy, the other day, I was kind of reflecting back. I bet I have been to 1,000 poetry readings, seriously, because I have very big ears that love listening to people reading, presenting their work. And so any chance I get, now more on Zoom than in person, but any chance I get, I try to plug in. I also enjoy the reactions I get to the poems that I present, the questions that may come up as a result, of course, anything positive that's said about them, but any kind of criticism. That's all very positive feedback. So, yes, I started early on and still enjoy going to public events, poetry events, and sharing my work at them.
Yeah, and you did receive positive feedback. You felt encouraged. You were
I
part
did.
of a special community, which I suppose is encouragement of itself. But you did, in terms of your writing, did people sometimes comment
They
to
did.
you?
A lot of times people would have questions about the work. And that would help me kind of rethink some of the poems. But often, I was very lucky. Folks were positively inclined to the work and would encourage me to share it, to send it in for possible publication. And so, yes, I never had a poetry mentor per se. I had several good friends, colleagues, other poets who provided, the nudge, the encouragement, the why not try it sort of approach. Absolutely.
Oh, sure. Okay, no, thanks for that. So can you tell us a little about the poetry scene in Maryland? I mean,
Sure.
and do you also venture out of the state to go to attend other events? But let's hear a little bit about
Sure.
Maryland.
Yeah, as I mentioned a minute ago, Maryland is not too far from Washington, D.C., or at least where I am in Maryland. And Washington, D.C., and some of the larger cities in Maryland, there's one called Baltimore, all of them have and have had for many years very active writing communities, and within those communities, active, very active poetry communities, a number of reading series. A number of journals published based here in this immediate area, a number of workshops. So it's a good garden for poets to grow in. The soil is very fertile here. And I was, again, lucky enough to plug in and realize, pretty quickly that this was a great spot to engage with the rest of the poetry community. Now, you also ask about beyond this area. I have always enjoyed traveling to other venues, other states in the US, outside of the US. I've been lucky enough to read overseas. And so especially now with Zoom, just the other day, I read with a group in Britain, in Canada all the time. I am not bilingual like I should be, or multilingual like I would like to be. So I have to kind of limit myself to readings that are mostly in English. So in other words, I can't zoom into Latin American poetry readings, but there are readings in Latin America, in Germany, in Asia. I've tried to take advantage, and I know other folks do as well, the Zoomosphere a lot that it allows.
Oh, great. I mean, that's one of the little pluses that came out of the pandemic for the culture. Zoom hookups with creative people, not just for business applications. How about another poem, Haran?
Sure. This poem first appeared in a journal called River Road Poetry Anthology, and it's all about the challenge of farming. In the US, back in the 1940s, we had a terrible environmental poor farming practice caused a situation that was called the Dust Bowl in the central part of the US. And so I tell people as I read this poem to think about the U.S. mid states in the middle of the country in the 1940s. It's titled Wheat Dust, and it's a persona poem. I read it in a slightly different voice. Wheat dust. Only thing I can think of as bad off as me is harvest. Yes. It's as flat as my face and just about as friendly as a dead rock. Try making anything out of this wheat dust, if you will. Someone said just yesterday that my eyes look bad. Well, of course they do from no water. Crows could tell you as much. They're not dumb. No rain, and they're gone. They've got good sense. Fact is, they flew off months ago when the going was good, when I was still sleeping on the old box springs for the love of Pete. But not anymore. Let me say, in fact, once again about what a joy it is to be sleeping flat on the floor, right down there with the mice and their musties. I tell you, if I didn't have Jimmy, I'd leave too. Damn, I would. Something will happen. So that was wheat dust.
I love the that little accent you put on there. We were transported to those farming regions. Drought has actually been a key problem here for farmers in Hawke's Bay and parts of New Zealand. In fact, I was recently talking to a local poet who wrote a poem about called Heat, about the drought. She remembered when the truck had to come for the sheep and take them away. Meanwhile, the city slickers were praising and tears of happiness with the sunshine and how wonderful it was for their holidays, but it was a nightmare for the farmers. So that's certainly understood in this region. Let's and talking about extremes, let's get on to this subject that's very dear to your heart, a
Sure.
true passion, and the Poetry Times Hunger website that you help run, I
Right.
imagine. I'll just say, listeners, I'll just quote a little bit off the website, Poetry Times Hunger, bringing a world of poets and their poems to the anti-hunger cause. We are using poetry to raise awareness, compassion, and funding. So please
Right.
look, feel free to talk about this organization, the work you do,
Sure.
and let's hear it, Byron.
So, again, Jeremy, I appreciate you letting me get up on my soapbox for just a minute.
Yeah.
So, poetry X hunger. We say poetry X, just like Xing out hunger.
I
Poetry X
nearly
hunger.
checked that with you.
No, no worries. No worries. The poetry X hunger. All of my career, I worked in the food security realm, both here in the US and overseas. And I was also writing poetry, but I never brought those two worlds together until I retired. And then I began to want to combine the two or bring the two worlds together. And in doing that, I kind of looked up and out to see what kind of poems were on offer by poets. That spoke to empty stomach hunger. I mean, there are thousands of poems about hunger of the heart, hunger of the spirit, hunger of the soul, and those are all wonderful. But in terms of poems that address some aspect of empty stomach hunger, I couldn't find too many. I found a few, but not many. And so I thought, well, this is maybe something I could help with. And so, to make a very long story short, with support from a number of organizations, as you mentioned, from the United Nations and from arts councils and a number of anti-hunger organizations worldwide, I was able to form a or create a website, a Poetry X Hunger website. It's just at www.poetryx, that's the letter X, hunger, that's all one phrase, poetryxhunger.com, which now has about 400 plus poems by poets from all over the world, young, old poets, poets who have recorded themselves, either audio or video, poems about all aspects of empty stomach hunger. The most important thing, though, Jeremy, about all of this is that it's one thing to have the poets share their talents with the initiative. It's another thing to put those poems to work. And we're trying as best we can to do that. So, for example, Feed the Children, which is a huge international anti-hunger group focused on feeding kids, picked up one of the poems by a Canadian poet that's on the Poetry X Hunger website, incorporated that poem into a 1 minute public service announcement with music and videography. That video has been viewed now by about 170,000 viewers on YouTube. So we've used the poem to raise awareness and to amplify the message. We've also used the poems to raise money. Over the last couple of years, we've raised $20,000, and that's all gone to anti-hunger groups in the US and overseas. So, for example, we provided the Poetry X Hunger poets raised that money and they provided it to a group called Seed Programs International. which works with school garden programs in Uganda. And we've also supported, very close to where I live, a community-based garden in Washington, D.C., with enough funds that they could buy a storage refrigerator. So, all of that to say, if your listenership in New Zealand is at all interested in checking out the website, please encourage them to do that. But more importantly, if they're interested in writing about hunger in New Zealand or elsewhere, I understand from a 2019 study that 1 in 5 New Zealand children aged 2 to 14, 1 in 5 live in households that are food insecure. And so if anyone wants to write about that situation or any situation about hunger and send in the work for possible publication on the website, they'd encourage them to do that. That would be wonderful.
Oh, look, that's exactly what I thought you'd suggest. And I know there was a poet, Mary Ellen, what's her name right now? From Hawke's Bay Live Poets. She, in
Okay.
fact, sent you a poem, didn't she, recently? And
I think so.
that was published. Warren. Mary Ellen Warren, yes, that's
What?
right.
Okay. Yes, yes.
No, what a wonderful cause. I mean, we say finding poems specifically about hunger. The one that came to mind when I first came across you and what you did was one that Pablo Neruda wrote years ago. It might be called Hunger, but I'd have to check. But I mean,
Well, we need all the data about hunger, all the trend lines, all the statistics. We need all of that to understand what we're facing. But if we don't have tools in the anti-hunger toolkit that speak to the heart, like poems can, then I think we're missing a tool. So we need all those tools in the toolkit. And, I think it's true to say that before Poetry X Hunger, we just didn't have too many poems on offer, freely available for use by anyone, to fight hunger. We do now. We have 400 plus, all very powerful poems.
Oh,
So,
great.
yeah, and more, we're adding to that. So please, any listeners, should feel encouraged to submit, send in work. That would be wonderful.
Well, it's about motivating, isn't it? It's I being a Kiwi, I can recall over many years watching the videos of African kids, World Vision and groups like that, trying to find donations. But the poet, I had certainly hadn't heard of anybody using poetry to do it. So that's a great initiative.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, look, so in a nutshell, I always tend to ask this question about poetry as a force for social change. So you would agree that it can be a powerful factor out there.
I would say yes, exclamation point. I mean, when I think of poetry as a tool for social change, the very first poem that comes to my mind is one that's fairly important to us here in the US and needs to remain very important. It's a poem that was written by a poet no longer with us, Emma Lazarus. It sits right at the base of the Statue of Liberty. It's called The New Colossus. And let me just read you a couple of those lines, the ones that always speak to the immigrant population coming ashore in the US in New York. It says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Now, if ever a poem helped shape a nation's approach to, in this case, a social cause called immigration at that time. I think this poem did. Like I said, we in the US need to revisit that poem. I'll put it that way. So it's just as timely now as it was when it was written. But that's one example of how a poem has been used to further a social cause. And currently, as you can imagine, Jeremy, there are all sorts of poems about everything from homelessness, racial inequality, poverty, of course, environmental sustainability, LGBTQ rights, freedom at large. And when you think that, when you understand, of course, that most songs that have lyrics, well, those lyrics are poems, then absolutely poetry has played, is playing, and will continue to have a role in affecting social change, mainly, especially because, as I said here a minute ago, it can reach out and grab the attention, the heart, the emotions, like I think very few other things can. So yes, exclamation point.
Yes, no, that thank you for that answer with those examples of how it's happened. And Emma Lazarus, is that correct? Did I say that right?
Lazarus, yeah, Lazarus.
Lazarus. Yeah, wow, talk about a time of a time where that needs to be revisited, right?
Exactly. So here just a moment ago, we were talking about Poetry X Hunger. Here's a poem that's somewhat relevant. I wrote it while I was in Ireland back in 2020, I believe it was, on a writer residency on an island off the northwest coast of Ireland called Achill Island. In order to get to Achill Island, you have to cross from mainland Ireland over Achill Sound to get to the island. And the only other thing I'll mention is that the Irish potato blight famine occurred from 1845 to 1849. The poem is titled Achill Sound. When the roads curve like sound and dip, as if lifting to bow, whenever all thoughts round or cluster, or when hearts call down, is Ireland. And as rich when poor was, or as wise as bear heads in snow seemed, and as twigs so frail broke into song, and as true as any blight or potato could be, was Ireland. So when sand laps the senses, or salt drips the edges as dreams, whenever hope streams through such heavens, and moss comes home, or hearts beam down, is Ireland. Jeremy, that's my love song to Ireland. It's titled Achill Sound.
Oh, that was beautiful. Yeah, what a famous historical event still talked about today. Thank you for sharing these poems, Hiram. Have you, I suppose you've got many years of writing. You've written hundreds and thousands of poems now, is it?
Well, I've written probably hundreds of poems. I've gone
Hundreds.
to probably thousands of readings, poetry readings.
Thousands of readings, yeah. I suppose thousands might be. I know they say Picasso painted 10,000 paintings, one a day, but poetry probably takes a little more than that. The average poem, I suppose, takes longer than a day to write. I mean, I want to ask you about your method for writing. Is there such a thing? Are you Is there anything you'd like to share about that?
Sure. Obviously, every poet, every person who writes and does it differently. It's always fun to compare notes with others. I have lived long enough that I can remember writing with pencil on paper, and I still do that to some extent, particularly when I'm walking and something comes up that I want to remember, I'll jot it down. But increasingly, like so many, I've transitioned to writing, revising, sending work off all via the computer. And that has its benefits. It has some drawbacks too, but it just in terms of efficiencies, it's really helpful. In terms of the actual process, I often write as I'm dropping off to sleep at night. Or I used to write quite a bit taking the subway into work as a commuter. I don't do that anymore, don't commute anymore, but I will catch a phrase or a phrase will just kind of come out of nowhere and I'll want to capture it when I'm walking or driving. In fact, I have to be careful when I'm driving that I don't dive for something to write with and miss the road. But so I don't have, I am not as disciplined a writer as so many of my colleagues are. I don't write every day. I certainly think about writing every day. And what I've noticed here lately is I've been spending a lot of time revising, updating and revising the work, because this is what I have found. The very best critic that I have ever encountered of my own work is time. And I mean by that, if I set a piece aside for a day, a week, a month, or longer, and come back to it, in the heat of composition, while I'm composing it and I'm very enthusiastic about its composition, I'll think it's, the best thing since sliced bread. But if I give it a chance to sit and give me a chance to be removed from it and then come back to it, I can see many of the warts, many of the flaws, and things that perhaps are salvageable that need some work. So I spend a lot of time revising, and I really enjoy that almost as much as composing something completely anew. I think that for me, both processes are important. You have to generate the work, but then you kind of, at least I have to do a lot of polishing. So, yeah.
Understood. Many times I've gone to open mics with poems that I thought were finished, and I'd read them, checked them, and I was satisfied. And then when you're in front of an audience, this other gear kicks in, and
Oh,
while you're reading the poem, it's really incredible. Your other voice is saying, "Whoopsie, that line's got to change." While you're reading the damn line, it's quite funny. But I was talking about this to a poet, and I suggested that open mics are actually a good place to for editing work. And
right.
he was quite offended. He said you shouldn't be
Oh.
coming to open mics with work that still needs editing. And I said, well, the thing was, I didn't realize until I went to
Well, in the first place, poems are rarely finished, I don't believe. I mean, there's always something that can be adjusted or improved. But I completely get it. I hear you, and absolutely. I've been to readings where reading something aloud, I go, I don't think so. That needs work. And in fact, a lot of poets will say that one of the best ways they have of assessing their work and then beginning to maybe work with it a bit more is to read it aloud to themselves. Better yet, in front of others who,
That's right.
even looking at people's expressions as you're reading, that gives you some feedback as well. So,
Well, Lawrence Ferlinghetti said in his book about poetry as insurgent art, "Compose on the tongue, not the page." Just one of his little tips. Oh no, that's good. We're all remarkably similar, but re remarkably different as well, I suppose, poets. So just look, in a nutshell, do you want to, did you want to, you've mentioned a few names actually, I think, but are there any particular names that of people that have inspired you over the years, or currently any contemporary American writers that, or international writers that do it for you? I'd like to.
I mentioned E. Cummings. He's kind of a guiding, has been a guiding star. Gerard Manley Hopkins, the rhythm and what he did with words just amazed me. Gerard Manley Hopkins, Emily Dickinson. I mean, the concision there, the compression almost to a riddle form is pretty remarkable. I've often said if I could just be one of Miss Dickinson's dashes, I'd be satisfied. The sounds in James Weldon Johnson's poem, God's Trombones. I know when I was coming up through, I used one of those poems and learned sign language, American Sign Language, so that I could interpret that some of that poem into American Sign Language. And the combination of his sounds that he uses, but also then that gesturing of the hands, the interpretation was, I thought, really, really powerful. Of late, I sample widely. I read a lot of individual poems by folks, some well-known folks, some less well-known folks. I also enjoy reading well-written prose.
All right. So, look, just briefly, in a nutshell, I mean, you have been describing what poetry is for all this time. We've been talking in a way, but did you have a phrase, or I gave you some quotes, didn't I? But and Emily Dickinson, speaking of her, if I feel physically as if the top of my head were taken off, I know that is poetry. Did you have any fun? Have you ever tried to define it, or would you have a
Well,
go?
of course, yes. I'm always wondering, kind of, what is this thing that, what is this thing we call poetry? Kind of riffing off of Miss Dickinson, I think for me, poetry is a doorway, a window, maybe even a sky. I believe poems, wonderfully written poems, show you a you beyond you. I think they open things up for you. People will often talk about the ending line of a poem closing a poem. I believe the ending line of a poem should open it up and raise questions. I don't look to poems to answer questions. I look to poems to wisely ask questions. And probably the most important thing for me, Jeremy, is I rely on poetry to surprise me. The poems that I can kind of predict from the first line where they're going to go aren't quite as enticing to me. Poems that take me on a little bit of a journey and have me at the end of the poem in a different spot than I was when I began the poem. Those are the ones that I find most rewarding. I don't know if that's answering your question or not, but surprise, wonder, a doorway, a window, those are the kind of phrases, words that come to mind when I think of poem.
No, that's I don't I've never heard anybody answer that question in that way before. That's very interesting. Thank you for that, Byron. Look, how about another poem, or a couple of things, before we finish? And also, just tell us again, perhaps, how people can get in touch with you. And you've basically said, please submit your poems. Go over that again, and we can sort of wrap things up. But over to you.
Well, I would, of course, love to be in touch with any any listeners who would like to be, the Poetry X Hunger website is just www.poetryx, the letter X, poetryxhunger.com. My own website is Hiram, Hiram, as in Michael, Hiram LaRue, LareW, poetry. So it's Hiram LaRue poetry.com. And I would, as I said, it would be a real treat to be in touch with some of your listeners. I picked a poem out of the pack that is a little bit irreverent, and I hope that it won't rub anyone the wrong way. It's actually kind of a wink of a
Right.
poem. It first appeared in Hidden Peaks, in the journal called Hidden Peaks. It's titled Given Over.
Okay.
Just once, and in the spirit of whatever winks, please help me create a dearly different religion, steeped in hoot toot and with whistling almighties, all given over unto and believed in with heavens upon us from the get-go. Yes, teach me how to pray like vines up on porches, or to sing out as spit jokes do, or as hummings that run past holy, and with what's twisted in knots, let it be so, as undone and ever shall be, with the faith of my sillies. Yes, let me become cartwheeling crumpets, or those abracadabra blessings, a vision of whatsoever is coming, all juicy laden with stings, and say so, and so on, and unto, into my rolling hereafters, into devout soap bubble amen, just once, but forever beyond. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for this opportunity to visit with you. It's been a real treat.
Oh, look, it's been lovely having you on and to just talk for just a wee bit to get some perspective on what you do, where you come from, and what you're involved with. You've been a breath of fresh air, I think, for our listeners today. And I think we can have an ongoing poetry relationship across the ocean.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, yeah.
And you keep up the good work. I've enjoyed listening to your podcasts and your, of course, your radio program too. So maybe we can reciprocate and have you appear sometime here in, and some of your fellow poets in New Zealand here in the US by
Oh,
Zoom.
look, yeah, no, please keep in touch about that. That'd be great.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much, and thank you, listeners. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
I found your diary underneath the tree and started reading about me. The words she'd written took me by surprise. You'd never read them in her eyes. They said that she had found the love she'd waited for. show it. Then she confronted with the writing there, simply pretended not to care. I passed it off as just in keeping with her total disconcerting air. And though she tried to hide the love that she denied, wouldn't you know? Started reading about me. The words began to stick and tears to flow. Her meaning now was clear to see. The love she'd waited for was someone else, not me. Wouldn't you know? She wouldn't show.